if you'd like to chat with us or ask us a question, if you're by the telephone, hit 1-1 on your keypad, and we'll see here that you have a question, and we'll be able to recognize you. We enjoy taking questions. If you're with us by web, then you can chat with us, and we'll be able to take your question like that. Later in the show, we have a special treat.
Yes.
Rabbi David Heber.
I heard. From the road.
From the road. Our man on the street. He's going to call in and give us a review of whatever he's doing. Whatever he's up to over there. Okay. You know where he is?
No.
We know he's not here.
Where is Rabbi Heber?
He's in...
We understand he's in North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Our sources tell us.
We tracked him down. And he's going to call in a little bit and tell us what's doing. So again, if you have any questions, please feel free to chime in. I wanted to tell you, Rabbi Bayer, I was this Sunday I went on a tour.
Yes.
To 7 Mile Market.
Amazing.
You know
really?
What 7 Mile Market is?
Yeah, I've been there occasionally.
It's our local...
Our local kosher supermarket.
Our local kosher supermarket. It has...
I didn't know they're giving tours now.
Well, I gave a tour to a group of college students. I don't know if any of them are joining us because I invited them to join us also, but... A very nice group of about 20 students. I would call them kids, but, you know.
Right. That's young people.
Young people, young men and women. And we went through... Johns Hopkins University. And we went through the different aisles to discuss various products and what's kosher about them, how do you make something kosher. Of course, usually people think that you make something kosher by blessing it. Right, that's the most common misconception, I think, in the kosher world. But I explained to them it's really all pretty much technical. It's about ingredients, about machinery. It's about it's definitely a religious aspect to kosher. I mean,
it's about machinery and ingredients.
It's a law,
right? They have to fit into Torah law,
right? There's halachos about it for many laws about it. But when we go into a factory, we're not reviewing the laws per se. We're just seeing how the laws do definitely play a role, but we're trying to see how the ingredients are. And it's very technical. It's very much like an inspection of the FDA or the USDA would go in and want to see various aspects of the plant. So it's very, very practical in that sense. So one of the questions that I was asked as we were going through the aisles, a fellow picked up the imitation bacon bits.
Yes.
And he said...
Wow, that's kosher! Great.
Whoa, what is this all about? You know, how are these imitation bits kosher? And I explained to him two things. First of all, that all the ingredients are kosher, and there's no bacon in there, and everything is imitation. But there is actually, I've read in various journals, there's a dispute among Jewish authorities, whether or not this is a proper, it's certainly kosher, there's no question about that, but is it appropriate? Is it a kosher thing to do?
Right.
Because you're trying to imitate.
Right. Well, it's the same thing with the imitation crab and imitation shrimp and all that stuff that came out a number of years ago. You know, we're trying to.
So is that the right thing to do or is not? The bottom line is it's certainly a kosher product and all the ingredients are kosher. But he asked me something else. He wanted to know, who tastes it to know that it's imitation, that it tastes like the real McCoy? Does a rabbi, give a taste test? What's the answer to that, Rabbi Bayer?
I don't know. I thought we had an expert bacon, you know.
No, come on. We have of course, the quality control people at the company are the ones to determine whether or not it really tastes
like bacon.
We don't. That segues into another point, is that whatever it says on the label, we don't give any stamp of approval to it. We don't know whether or not it tastes like bacon or it doesn't taste like bacon. We don't know whether or not it's as fresh and, you know, whatever the claims are, basically we are giving a certification to the kosher aspect of it.
Right.
You know, we don't claim to make assessments of whether or not it is organic.
It tastes good or...
Right.
Well, you know, a similar kind of a question came up as far as our... assessments outside of kosher had to do with the peanuts and the salmonella and apples.
Right. We talked about that, but we spent some time.
Yeah, but we don't. The only thing we do taste is it is a kosher product that we might, you know, have to make sure. I take care of bakeries and things like that. So.
All right. Now, one other thing I pointed out to them was that almost anything can be kosher. I went to the cereal aisle and I showed them that there's not one brand of major cereal that's not in that aisle because they're all kosher. Now you have some non-kosher cereals.
Except for Lucky Charms with the marshmallows in it.
Lucky Charms with the marshmallows. Okay.
Right.
And there are other, particularly the marshmallow cereals, but. I mean, you'd have to really think it hard walking through that aisle to see which ones
right. Are
not kosher.
You're not missing much nowadays.
You're not missing much.
To keep kosher.
Right. You can buy almost, go into any, I mean, we could have been in Safeway or into a Giant or any of those stores, and we could have gone down those aisles and show everybody how popular kosher is.
It's much easier to keep kosher these days than it was a couple generations ago, and there's no question about it.
The other thing I showed them was we went down an aisle where things were difficult, I think, to keep to make kosher, like the barbecue sauce aisle.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little more tricky because there they usually make it in a non-kosher facility or a facility that also does non-kosher.
Right.
And then there's kosherization involved, and this is just more tricky. And I went through some of those details, but. You know, I think we had.
Did anyone bring up any questions about the cost of items, or they weren't even up on
that? No, they asked me who pays for our visits to a plant.
And you said we did it out of the goodness of our heart.
No, we
don't.
All right, we're not all like you.
I've been dissuaded.
We're not all like
I've
you.
I've been disillusioned.
We do. We have a dual purpose. We are dedicated. To what we do, but on the other hand, somebody has to pay the bills. And you can't ask people to do something for nothing. So the companies pay the bills, and we are a non-profit organization. We're a not-for-profit. But we do, there definitely is a cost, and the cost is borne by the companies. And it's not really much for them, because let's say they pay whatever fee it is.
We
divide that
by
each product that they make.
Percentages, right.
How much is that, like 1 penny or... 10 cents? Or
very minimal.
It's very minimal, and if they can get more market share, so it's worth it.
Absolutely.
Let me see if we have any questions. Oh, you have to check the lettuce from the salad bags that have the Star K on them.
Oh, that's a good question to be asking us here at the Star K.
Well, no, it's a fair question, because some of the bags of lettuce, he's talking about the pre-washed lettuce that has our Star K on it. Our feeling is, and our certification is that no, you don't need to check it anymore. That it's okay. Now,
same thing. We have meat that we say is kosher. You don't need to kosher it again when you take it home.
That's true. But the difference over here is that these bags of lettuce sometimes go through another process that they have another sticker on them that somebody else looks through it. So, is that necessary? And the answer is that that's not. We don't feel that it's necessary. Of course, you should ask your local rabbi and ask him what he feels about it. But asking us, it's fine. We have a rabbi on site at these
at the various lettuce growing processing places. Yeah.
And what does he do there?
He checks the lettuce.
He checks
for bugs. He takes samples of each
of the batches after they're washed to make sure and sometimes he rejects some of the samples and that's
right. That's why at times during the year you'll have salad available. Sometimes it won't be. It all depends on how much is getting out.
And that's why we put kosher. That's why we put the Star K not pre-printed on the bag.
Right. It's in the date code.
Because the date code can change. The date code does change.
Right.
So and sometimes it will have a Star K and sometimes it won't. If we pre-print them on the bag, then that would mean that every single bag is kosher, and we're not claiming that because it depends on what the rabbi finds.
Right.
So I hope that answers your question, Shlomi.
It's like ET has joined the meeting.
Okay. Again, if you have any questions, you can chat them to us or by phone. Hit 1-1 on your keypad if you're joining us by phone. I wanted to share with you an email I got from Amazon.com.
Whoa. We're like really Ivy League this today, you know? Hopkins, Amazon.com.
Well, they come to the right place. You know, they know where to go. So the question was, she works for Amazon.
They wanted to carry the Passover book? On Amazon, is that what it was?
No, I think they might carry it, but that's not what it was. It was about Passover, and her question was, how does she store? They have a big warehouse, and they sell Passover products. And she wanted to know how they're supposed to store their Passover products so it doesn't compromise.
What kind of Passover products does Amazon.com sell? Like matzah?
Matzah.
Really?
Fish, I guess. It's,
really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they did at this point. So I don't know if they still do. But
so what a thunk it.
Yeah. So they want to know how they should store it to keep with the kosher guidelines. And basically, you know, as long as the thing was boxed and sealed and you didn't have bread sitting on top of it, I mean, that's the way it's done in the warehouse. I mean, everything comes
right.
in a box, and I didn't think there was really too much concern about it. Just like when you go into Safeway and you see boxes of matzah, you're not really that, because you're going to rip off the wrapping and you're going
right.
to not use that. So
it's just a question of whether or not if they had, sometimes you'll have a product, which even matzah, we had the issue, if you remember, before Passover, where you had kosher for Passover matzah and then not kosher for Passover matzah.
Right.
So
they should make, that. I want to actually talk about that because after I spoke to Amazon, I went on their site, I wanted to see what do they have kosher for Passover.
Right.
And I typed in Passover.
Yeah.
And you know what came up?
Haggadah.
No. It came up matzah that was not kosher for Passover.
There
that said specifically not for Passover. You know why
it
came up? Because I put in the word
Passover.
And so it brings up
not for Passover.
Because it's not that smart to know I want kosher for Passover.
At least you know that they're on the ball. That they had it on there, that it was separate. They separated it out.
I know that they had it on there, but it could also be a person may not realize that if he's buying, he puts in Passover and it comes up matzah,
right.
and then he's going to click and order it.
Or,
so I pointed that out to her, and she said she was going to fix it. So
it's also important for their warehouse people to realize,
right?
You know, when they were filling the order.
So that's that's what Amazon was asking. Yep. Now. Okay, we do have another question. Let me see. Excuse me a second. I've got to bring this computer here closer. Why is there only a small selection of salads that carry the StarKey certification? Is there any chance of the StarKey broadening the certification of salads? So, okay.
Well,
we
were just addressing that point.
Well, no, he means... There are some salads that never have certification. I think, is that what you mean, Rick? That you're asking why do these salads never have certification? I don't know. Do we have? We're talking about brands. Like we have Dole, and we have River Ranch
and Fresh
still
I
with
think,
us.
I think.
I mean,
Taylor
we only have the companies that we certify. We can only certify companies that have
certification. Are you asking about brands? Are you asking about types of lettuces and different things available? Is that what they're asking? That's what I thought he was asking.
I think he means within a brand, there's only certain
types. We have a lot of the major brands.
Well, within the brand, how come there are only certain types of lettuce that we certify?
Oh, well, that has to do with infestation.
That has to do with infestation, and it has to do with, right. Some of them are just too infested.
To even
think about a certification, so we don't certify. So if you could give us an example of what you find without a certification, maybe we'd be able to answer that question. Is Rabbi Heber calling? Okay. Okay, we're hoping to hear from Rabbi Heber shortly. Okay, we do have Rabbi Heber. Let's try to bring him in on the phone. Rabbi Dovid Heber is our... one of our kashrus administrators, and today he's traveling on the road. Rabbi Heber, are you there?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Okay, we're doing very well. Okay, the question is, how are you?
greetings from North Carolina.
Okay, we're glad that we tracked you down and that you were able to join us. The wonders of modern technology.
Yep, that's amazing.
So what are you doing out there in North Carolina, Rabbi Heber? What's brought you there, and what can you share with our listeners?
Actually, this trip was a 2-day trip review. Yesterday I was in Ohio doing an initial inspection on a product, and today I was doing a review of a StarKey facility that is a certified plant. In an initial inspection of a facility. That's going to make a StarKey product for the first time. We review the equipment to make sure that it's okay. And in this instance, it happened to be an all-cold operation, so that makes it a lot easier because then you're not dealing with kosherization.
What's the product? I mean, Heber, what was the product?
It was a nutritional supplement product that's being made there. And it's a cold blend. And, you know, we check the ingredients, make sure all the ingredients match. They're not producing it yet, but they're already staged pretty much to start. So we review, you know, they had given the formula in advance, and we had reviewed that formula to make sure that all the ingredients are okay on paper, so to speak, to say, okay, this fits for certification based on what you're submitting. What they do is they submit kosher letters, which show that the raw materials, that they're buying, you know, ingredient A, and they're buying ingredient B, they're buying a flavor, they're buying, they had some juice concentrates that they're actually using, and they submitted kosher letters to show, with letters of kosher certification, which indicated that the product is kosher. And then we actually go into the facility to make sure that the information that was submitted and we approved on paper is in reality what's really being used. So it took me.
So we don't just trust them based on what they submit to us by email.
Right.
We verify.
We were verified, you know, on site, and the
trust was verified. So Rabbi Heber, so this, I just want to point out, this is not unusual that you would go here from the office to make such an inspection, because this is an initial inspection. It's the first time we're setting up this product or this company. And so we'd like to have somebody as experienced as yourself from the office go. The people that work for us in the field are excellent and do a wonderful job, but we'd like to have somebody from the office go in when we're first setting it up.
Right, generally that's what happens. It also helps, you know, you have an understanding of what's going on. So if your mashgiach, your supervisor has a problem down the road because something came up, you know, based on your inspection, you know already, you know, what the issues are or may have been. And then again, you raw materials, and then that was it. And today was more of a review of an existing facility. And again, there is a mashgiach that goes in on a regular basis to the facility, but this was just another check to make sure that things are in order, and to, you know, here you'll review raw materials, you review production records, and so on, to make sure that what's supposed to be happening is happening. You also review what's going on today to see that, you know, everything is in order, and it was a nice place, and things worked out.
The nutraceuticals?
This place actually does flavor blends and flavors. So
that's your forte, the medicinals and
primarily medicinals, right? Usually, and then sometimes we get some other places as well for inspections and reviews and things like that.
Not that this is one of the companies you went to, Rabbi Heber, but tell us, what are the medicinal nutritional companies that we certify? Which ones do we certify?
We certify a number of plants. We certify Melaleuca, we certify Shackley, we certify Amway, we certify Nature's Sunshine, Amway also known as Quickstar or Act Business Group. You know, those are a number of them that we end up doing.
Right, but we don't have something like One A Day Plus Iron or something like that yet, right? Or
yeah,
Flintstones is not under the circuit.
It's only national. I mean, some of these are national brands, but those, the One A Days and the Flintstones are not so simple, because, I mean, you look at the label of both of them. Some of them, I believe, have gelatin in them, and they're not kosher. So,
what
that
are
would
some
be
of
a
the
big formulation change?
Didn't you once say, Rabbi Heber, that kosher nutraceuticals is the last frontier in the United States?
Yeah.
What was that line again? I forgot. Because
so
we're cereals, we already did. Barbecue sauce, we have. You know, salads, we not all of them, as Rick points out on the chat, but we have many salads that are kosher. So what's left? That's not kosher. You know, that's your nutraceuticals.
Well, that plays into what we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation, where you can walk down the aisles of the store and you can see there's so much out that it's kosher.
Right. And why is it, Rabbi Heber, that the pharmaceuticals are not yet, keeping up pace with the rest of the kosher world?
Well, I think it's a simple reason of twofold. Number one is the demand has been less because there are heterim, there are times it's permissible to take it without a certification, which is really what we rely on with almost all OTC products out there, with a few exceptions of some brands.
I think that's over-the-counter, right?
Yeah.
Don't have over-the-counter, right? Don't have certification. Because number one is people who are ill are taking it. So there's a lot of leniencies there. And then also how you take it, you don't chew it and swallow it. You just swallow it straight, and that calls for like a derech achila, which means you take it in a different manner, and therefore has certain leniencies built into it. Again, it's not a carte blanche permissible either. It's much easier when there is kosher symbols on it, or there are kosher symbols, and therefore the consumer, knows they don't have to ask questions. But the demand has been less, and the need has been less, but it's building up. There are people, that really want to see more of that, and that hence the demand, especially in the vitamin industry, which doesn't have that carte blanche. It doesn't have the leniency by vitamins are less because they're nutritional, so they're not as urgent as let's say someone taking an antibiotic, for example, where they're could be problematic, figure more problems if they don't take it.
Okay, well, let me ask you something, Rabbi Heber, a little off the topic. You took a flight to North Carolina, or you drove?
No, I flew. I flew into Ohio yesterday.
Do you see any signs of the swine flu? People going around in the airplanes with these masks that we see on the news, or you wouldn't know the difference?
I didn't see any of that.
Did you take your Purell with you?
Well, I didn't see any of it here. It certainly enters your mind when you're home. You feel a little more snug if you're in a city that hasn't gotten it yet. I don't think there are any cases in Maryland, at least not as of a couple of days ago.
Since you left, they said
it's going to come. But in other words, when you're in an airport, you realize, like last night, I was there in an airport, which is a transfer. A lot of connections are made when I was there. So you got people coming and going. I mean, they came from cities that have it. And, it's certainly an issue. My Rifaenu and Shemayin Esrei was better.
You prayed for it more.
Right. All right.
No, this really has nothing to do with...
Pray that it should not happen.
What's that?
Pray that it should not happen.
Right. The swine flu really, it doesn't come from eating pork or... Right, that's what I understand. It has nothing to do with... In other words, a person who keeps kosher would not necessarily be more protected, scientifically wise, than someone who doesn't, right? It's not really a kosher issue.
Yeah, I guess not. I mean, unless just eating habits. In other words, I guess from an agriculture, in other words, a farmer of kosher food, or a kosher farmer that's only raising kosher types of products, and there's no pigs and things like that, versus some of the foreign countries that we've seen in some of our reps out there. Where there are the open markets with the sanitary conditions are less, and therefore, these types of jumps, the initial jump is going to happen, and wherever the initial jump is going to happen, it's going to be more, more.
You're saying they have markets where they have live animals.
Right, markets where there's live animals and it's unsanitary and there's pigs there, which are typically not the cleanest of animals to start with. You're gonna have this potential problem, but I don't know. I mean, you gotta ask. The CDC. If you eat pork, what are the odds? I think they're saying
that doesn't have anything to do with it. Of course, we don't recommend that, but obviously. But
I mean, historically,
saying that it doesn't have anything to do with God forbid contracting.
One more reason.
I don't know. Historically, the Orthodox Jewish system of sanitary conditions.
Right.
Has been supreme. Not really in the world.
Black death.
In the Black
right.
Plague, right?
Right.
Because
I've heard different versions of that, whether that really was true or not. But
we have to wash our hands after we come out of the bathroom. Before we eat, we wash everything.
But even more, we can't live. We can't live in an area where there's waste material. We can't make blessings where there's excrement and things like that. So by definition, there has to be a system of sanitary. that's there. Now, again, today, the United States that we live in has, you know, is very sanitary to start with. People have, you know, even gone, you know, my grandmother was very sanitary. She used to wash bananas before and oranges, and we, you know, she was born in Europe and came to America. She was really ahead of her time in this area because people would, like, laugh and say, what are you washing a banana for, or an orange? You know, but anyway.
All right, Rabbi Heber, thank you very much for checking in with us, and we wish you a good trip back.
We missed the office. We'll be landing this afternoon, but won't make it in time for I'll be by the time I get out of the airport, it'll probably be around the time shortly around the time you're closing. So I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, we'll see you tomorrow.
Right.
Thank you very
all
much.
Right,
keep up the good work. Take care.
Take care. All right. Bye bye.
Bye.
Oh, that was interesting, Rabbi Heber from from North Carolina. Let me just. Okay, I think there's some other discussion here about the
salad.
The salad, but I think the bottom line here is Rick is saying that he understands now why we don't certify certain salads and yet we do others.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost coming to the end of our conference. Time flies, Rabbi Bar. If anybody has any questions, either by phone, they can hit 11, and we'll see that you have a question, or you can chat it to us, as some have been doing. This is a monthly conference. For the buyer, so I want you to know that.
I realize that.
Every month, on the last Wednesday of the month at noon, we get together and we talk about kosher issues that have come up. And
thank God, no big emergencies.
No, this time we have nothing really, no kosher scandals. I want to thank Mr. Zev Steen for helping us and running. Without him, it would be impossible to run this this conference. We do have some questions that we get by email. Let's deal with this one, Rabbi Bayer.
Mm-hmm.
Before the conference, we got this email asking that we talk about this. What are the rules regarding eating kosher fish, either grilled or raw, and grilled vegetables or even cut dry salad in a non-kosher restaurant? In the U.S. or any place else in the world? Wow. I answered that on one foot.
Yeah.
The
short answer is don't do it.
Well, kosher fish is actually requires a lot of certification, supervision. You have to know that it has the scales.
Right.
And you have to know that it's how it's being cut, what kind of knife, and you have to know that it's...
Well, here they want to know about grilled fish or grilled vegetables, so that
right.
in and of itself is going to
right.
be problematic.
Right, all that is an issue because there are some rules about when you grill it, there needs to be some...
well, at least to make sure that
the grill is
hasn't
kosher.
Been used
right.
for...
Right, that's one of the issues. Also, there's some Jewish involvement required in the actual preparation. So, eating, you know, the old story of going into a non-kosher restaurant and just ordering fish...
Right.
That was very common.
A couple generations ago,
people would do that. You know, they
were
going, I'm just ordering fish.
Right.
And they didn't realize that that fish has many, many issues and almost the same as meat.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. Not quite, but doesn't need to be slaughtered, which
right.
is a big deal. Because, right, in order to slaughter kosher meat, you need to have
right.
a whole setup for it. And fish, you kill it in any way. But... Still, there are many rules regarding the kosher fish, and I think I think the world has come around more or less to understanding that you can't just go into a non-kosher restaurant and,
right.
and order kosher fish. And then there are other issues with going into a restaurant, a non-kosher restaurant. People may think that you're ordering something that's non-kosher.
Right.
That's called Maris Ayin.
That
people actually in the kosher's current, which is our monthly. Quarterly publication.
Yes.
Rabbi Frankel was writing an article about that.
That's in the current?
In the current that's coming out in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Rabbi Frankel, who heads our Halacha Institute over here, is going to write an article about
Marisayin.
Going into a non-kosher restaurant and ordering kosher. So actually, that would be a good article for this person to read. And
I think the more important question, though, is what about dry salad or... People ask that question a lot. Can
going
you order
into
vegetables?
A dry salad.
Like
well,
that.
Vegetables comes back to what we're talking about.
Right,
so
with
now.
The salad.
You know, if they're buying if you're buying salad.
So the lettuce you have to probably could not have.
The lettuce would be a problem, but what about if they give you cucumbers?
Tomatoes,
there's
cucumbers.
No, there's no
right.
bugs. There aren't bugs in the cucumbers
right.
and tomatoes.
Right. Could you have that?
Well, okay, aside from the problem of going into the non-kosher restaurant, we have to know what kind of knife they would be
right.
using. If they're cutting their swine, and then they cut the cucumber.
I was going to say that, but I didn't know that.
Were you going to say that?
Swine. That's
okay. Okay. Then there'd be transfer of the residue on the knife would transfer from the pig to the cucumber. That would be a problem. Okay, we have a question.
Ossie's fish.
What was the story with Ossie's fish? Okay, here's somebody in the know. Ossie's fish is a fish company.
Well-known fish company
right,
in New York.
Based in Borough Park, and they were under Star K for many years, and we sent out an alert that we are no longer certifying them. And the answer that we gave to people asking us this question, because it's a fair question to ask, why are they not certifying anymore, is that the reason that we're not certifying them has nothing to do with kosher issues, nothing to do with kashrus, and, you know, if they pick another certifier or if they have picked another certifier,
right.
so fine, but... It wasn't a kosher issue. The concern of the questioner is that if we dropped them because they've had some violation,
right, that was
then they would be hesitant. Even perhaps somebody might pick them up, some other certified, they would be hesitant to eat there. But it had nothing to do with kosher issues. So you can, I think that answers your question. We do have a couple of questions through the telephone system, so let's take those, Zev. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I know you addressed this once in an article, but I don't remember what you said. My husband brought home a container of hydroponically grown tomatoes. What bracha do you make on that?
Okay, hydroponically grown tomatoes. She wants to know what is the proper blessing
to
make on
hydro what?
Hydroponically by buyer. Oh, you're kidding me. Fell for that.
Well, just a minute.
Okay, you're saying not everybody knows what that means. Hydroponic are vegetables or fruits or whatever may be grown with water. One of those words, hydro or ponic, means water.
I think it's hydro.
Okay, there you go. I think you're right.
I think so. That's a good neurological education coming in there.
So it's water-grown vegetables. There isn't any earth.
Dirt.
There isn't
no
any
dirt
earth. You actually do not need any earth to grow fruits and vegetables. All you need is something to hold them in place. And moisture, and nutrients. So the water is there. They put something to hold it, and they add liquid nutrients.
Got it.
And you don't need any earth. So the question is, what blessing to make? That is actually a matter of some dispute. There are those that say to make the regular blessing that you'd make on earth-grown tomatoes, which is a borei peri ha'adama, that God brings out fruit from the earth. However, the Star K opinion is to make a different blessing, that is shahakol nia bidvaro, which is the same blessing you make on things that don't grow from the earth, like meat and fish and cheese, because this really doesn't grow from the earth.
Right.
So the question is it, you make the blessing because it's the same type of food that grows from the earth. You make the same blessing. Or do you say, well, it doesn't actually grow from the earth. How can
right.
you say that it grows from the earth? So that is the question. But
the bottom line is,
we say
make a shahakol.
Make the bracha, the blessing of shahakol, on the now, another question we get a lot about the hydroponics is that does hydroponically grown lettuce need to be checked for bugs?
Uh-huh.
Because maybe it grows
because there's no bugs in the
there's
water.
There's no bugs in the water, and it grows in some greenhouse somewhere.
It's cleaner,
right? And the truth is, it may be cleaner. But on the other hand, we're not there to see how they're growing it. I mean, are there
mm-hmm.
holes in the screens in the greenhouse? You
right.
know, are there bugs? How do they store it? The bugs can come from outside. So therefore, we would require that you check hydroponically grown store-bought lettuce as well. We do have the AeroGarden certification where you do it in your own home. So then if your home doesn't have bugs, then the lettuce wouldn't have bugs either.
I know your home doesn't have bugs.
Well, some people's homes have aphids and thrips, these little lettuce bugs, because they come in from on other vegetables. If you
really?
Buy, yeah, if you buy from a store lettuce, regular lettuce, and then you put it next to your AeroGarden,
you can have a problem.
The bugs jump from one to the other. Yes, I've had people tell me that. Is there another question? All right. Let me see if there's anything else by through chat. I think that is, brings us to an end. Again, if you would be kind enough to go, everybody joining us by web, kind enough to go to your tools that you have on the top of the screen, and give us some feedback, we'd be greatly indebted to you. Anything else you want to end off with?
I had a great time.
Okay. Thanks. I'm glad that.
Can I come back again?
You can. We will.
Thank you.
We'll be happy to have you. There's a lot of other material that we prepared that we didn't get to, but there's only so much time. Again, I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg. This is Rabbi Baruch Beyer, and we're here at the Star K, brought to you by kosherclasses.org. This discussion will be archived at kosherclasses.org, so if somebody missed it, they can catch it over there, look on their podcast, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Have a very good day.
Bye.